So I'm Sev Gyaral, and I am delighted to be chairing this session because I think it's really new stuff and evolving stuff, and it's always nice to be on the cutting edge of whatever the science is. So I'm delighted to be here. I'm even more delighted to be co-chairing this session with someone I really love and respect greatly. My co-chair is Lauren Bacall, if you remember her. I'm sure you're saying, it says Jeannie Marazzo here, what's she doing? When she starts talking, you will know exactly what I'm doing, because she has an incredible cold, which gives her this really attractive voice. So I don't think Jeannie needs much introduction. I'm sure everybody knows by now that she's no longer in Seattle. She's at the University of Alabama, and she's doing even more cutting edge, changing definitions of the field kinds of work. So I'm going to turn this over to Jeannie Marazzo, because obviously vaginal ecology is not something I can tell you anything interesting about. But Jeannie is going to introduce our session and introduce our first speaker. Jeannie, please.
That may be the most fun introduction I've ever had. So thanks for coming this morning. Actually, Sevi does deserve a lot of credit, because this symposium came out of a similar symposium that she organized for a meeting in Morocco last spring, and I was a speaker, as was Sharon Hillier and Lisa Manhart, and it was really fantastic. We just really, I think, had a great discussion about some of the issues concerning the vaginal microenvironment and its relationship to STIs. We learned a lot and had fun, and we thought that we would replicate that session with some tweaks for this conference. And so we convened this meeting and also got three superb speakers, all of which I've actually worked with in some capacity. So I can vouch for their intellect and intense and conscientiousness. We've seen their slides. They've been working on them for days now. So this is how it's going to happen. We're going to have Rebecca Brotman first talk to us about the vaginal environment and how it can be disrupted in terms of movement from normal flora to less desirable flora when you're talking about outcomes. Christina Musny from UAB is then going to talk to us about attempts to restore that normal environment. And then Lisa Manhart will come in and bring in that pesky sex partner issue that we've been talking about, that is the persistent disruption to the vaginal microenvironment. So with that, I'm going to ask Rebecca to come on up and get us started. Rebecca is an associate professor, as you can see, at the Institute for Genome Sciences at the University of Maryland. She's also a PhD in epidemiology and has really been involved in this work for her entire career, since she started working with Jonathan Zandelman and Khalil Ghanem at Johns Hopkins. So we really owe her a lot for moving this field forward. So Rebecca, come on up.
Thank you. And in fact, so on Wednesday morning, David Fredericks gave us a beautiful overview of this topic. And I sat listening and thought that this talk, I'm not going to repeat this talk. And so I was still working my talk at the time, and I decided to expand on what he talked about and to talk about my perspective as an epidemiologist in trying to, and what happens when I get a data set like this and how we handle it and how complex it is. And so I'm going to try and give you the sort of the epidemiologist perspective of this data. And of course, as the ballet dancer says, repetition is the mother of all learning. So let's proceed. So just a brief outline. I'm going to talk to you about some of the epidemiologic studies of linking the vaginal microbiota incident STI, how we measure the microbiota, the biomarkers, how the vaginal microbiota provide protection, and then this question that Jeannie posed to me: what is a disrupted vaginal environment, and are there optimal states? Unanswerable questions at this point. Well, we'll see. Okay. So, as Jeannie said, I started at Johns Hopkins in 2000, just on the cusps of Craig Cohen having published his big cross-sectional study linking bacterial vaginosis and HIV. I was, for my master's degree, my mentor was Taha at Hopkins, and he had just published his then he proceeded to do the longitudinal study looking at BV and acquisition of HIV. And so I landed in this environment of all this new and exciting research that hadn't been done before. These are the first two studies, I think, I might be wrong, to look at BV and HIV. And thinking about thinking about that BV was not just a nuisance disease, that it was associated with perhaps a large number of issues. And then, and so I wrote 2000 to present here, why do you want to study BV? Because I still get the question, even though in 2012, Craig Cohen followed up with another power hitter of, well, women are not just at risk for HIV, they're also transmitting HIV when they have BV, so female-to-male transmission. And so there's just a load of outcome studies that are beginning to come out on the association with BV with a number of reproductive health outcomes. Here is a short list, not an exhaustive list. It's not everything. But these are just a few papers that I pulled out. This is not a formal meta-analysis. I just threw them on a graph. What these are that differentiates that these are longitudinal studies assessing the vaginal microbiota and incident STI. So the vaginal microbiota were measured before the incident STI. And what you can see is that what I love to see as an epidemiologist, they all line up around two. And what I also love to see, I don't know if Jen Balkus is here, I don't think I've seen her, is that our studies are almost identical. So I like to see that, number two and number three, that we have the same point estimate in the same range. And so I like to see when things line up like that. So it looks like BV is associated with about a twofold increased risk for HIV, roughly, not in a formal meta-analysis, although I'm sure someone's done that too. So when I was at Hopkins, this is all beginning to emerge. Why are we interested in BV? Well, in 2003, Harold Weisenfeld at Pittsburgh did just a really beautiful study looking at female STD contacts, so women who were contacts to men or contacts to partners with GC or CT. And what he found was that lactobacillus-dominated vaginal microbiota were less likely to be infected. And then others went on to study it, and it looked, and it appears that the ranges for chlamydia and gonorrhea among contacts is about 25 to 40% for chlamydia, 64 to 80% for gonorrhea. And the question I have, and that all had, was, does STI acquisition vary in part by the vaginal microbiome that a woman has? What are the host factors? What are the microbial factors that a woman has? So I could do an entire hour on the mechanisms of protection from the vaginal microbiota. I only have 20 minutes, and there's a lot I want to cover. These mechanisms that I list here that I'll talk about in a minute, these are my favorite mechanisms. There's certainly others, and certainly some that I won't talk about today, and some that are emerging that a lot of basic scientists are working on. One of the nice things is interest has poured into this field, there's a lot going on. So number one, if you learn anything else today that if you haven't already learned, the lactobacillus are the keystone bacteria because of their ability to produce lactic acid, which results in a low pH. That's one of the main mechanisms that we're working on. But taking that a step farther, we're interested in that lactic acid. Well, there's chiral isomers of lactic acid, LND isomers. Do they behave differently? There's some papers that are beginning to emerge that they behave differently. So we're drilling farther down into higher resolution of what we're going to of these biomarkers, bacteriocins, biosurfactants. I worked with Richard Cohen at Hopkins. He has chapters on mucus, learning about mucus. I just hired a postdoc who's an expert in mucus. So learning about mucus, you joke, you jest, but mucus is big. I was talking to Patty Kissinger. I just saw her somewhere in the audience. Lactobacilli and the interaction with T. vaginalis adhering to host cells. There's a lot of new biology emerging about the co-infections. Disruption of biofilms, which we're going to hear about from Christina next. And then I just had a week-long visit from Carl Yeoman out at Montana State, and he has a big active program on biogenic amines and how they enhance growth rates of various pathogens and shield them from host immunologic defenses. So these are just my favorites. We'll talk about more. Okay, so in any good epidemiology talk, we have to talk about the trials. And Dave Fredericks introduced this, but what I wanted to add to the clinical trials that have treated women with BV to see if they could reduce their STDs, I just wanted to add one thing, that it looked like there were three studies that have been done, one by Schwebke, one by Jen Balkus, and then and the group in Seattle with McClellan, and then Jane did another one. The first two showed some reductions in gonorrhea and chlamydia. They had longer durations of treatment, prophylaxis treatment, more frequent treatment. And the third study that Jane did, the treatment of asymptomatic BV with oral metronidazole, did not affect the incidence, just published this year in CID. I'm just wondering if this is a longer duration thing. And, you know, we could have a whole other talk on BV, we are going to have another talk on BV treatment and how it's not so effective. And so I think that these should not be discouraging data, that I think that they're giving us some indications of where we need to go that there might be something there. Well, I certainly hope so. So all the studies I presented to you so far, prior studies of BV and STI risk have all been based on clinical criteria for BV, the EMSO criteria, Gram stain analysis or cultivation of bacteria. One thing you should know, that the overwhelming majority of microbial species resist cultivation in the laboratory, and it's very laborious. There's been 30 years of cultivation. It's very hard to do, and we're trying to move to non-cultivation methods, and I'll talk about that today. My primary hypothesis in all my grants and all my papers is that different communities of vaginal bacteria are likely to differ in terms of their ability to protect the lower genital tract. The genus Lactobacillus is thought to be protective from the Gram stain and BV clinical criteria data. However, we need more strain-specific data. And how can molecular approaches inform us? So that's what I'm going to talk about next. Three brief slides before I proceed on BV, just for anyone who's on. I know this is a very knowledgeable audience, and I'm going to leave it to Christina to talk more about this, but I just want to remind the audience that BV is this gamut of anaerobic bacteria, 100 to 1,000-fold increases in these pathogenic bacteria, followed by these massive decreases in lactobacilli. Just this, and this is what we're calling the disrupted environment, this dysbiosis. And all I'm going to say about the diagnosis of BV is just to say that these are the biomarkers that have been used previously, these Gram stains and the AMSL criteria. We heard a beautiful hour, the debate last night. I loved the debate last night about the positives of Gram stains and microscopy and the strengths of these diagnostics and the weaknesses. And I will tell you that I'm going to proceed for the next 15 minutes talking about all the molecular stuff, and I still, every data set I get, the first thing I do is cross it with Gram stain. I cross it with pH, just to make sure that things are going in the direction I think, because that dollar Gram stain is really holding its own. It's not going to give us the high resolution that we want, but in the extremes, on the healthy and the extremes, it's a beautiful test. The problem with the Gram stain is this. There's a difficulty in assessing composition by Gram stain. So here you can see in box D and box E and box F, L-inners, adipobium, vaginae, gardnerella, very difficult to distinguish on Gram stain. And so that's what makes the middle Gram stain, that intermediate range, so difficult to score, I think. So what can we do? We've done the clinical criteria, we've done Gram stain, cultivation. What are other things that we can do that we can work on? Well, so I think of it this way. Who is there? The survey. That's what we've been working on for the past decade at the Institute for Genome Sciences. The survey, the microbial species composition and abundance in samples by sequencing taxonomic marker genes, 16S RNA. Then what can they do? The metagenomics. That determines the microbial community gene content, the whole content of the genomic DNA. What are they doing? The metatranscriptomics, the suite of genes expressed. The metabolomics, I'm going to present some data today, the chemical output of the community and its host performed by NMR and mass spec and gas spec. Metaproteomics, analysis of the set of proteins produced by the community and functionally represents the community. So this, I think, is where we're going to go. It's expensive, it's difficult, it's not easy, but I think we're going to get some answers from these because they're going to be very high resolution. And it's going to be the task of all of us, the epidemiologists, to determine how to use this data and then to implement it in interventions to go after these targets. So I'm going to do a brief interlude on the surveys because it gets to some of the compositional issues we've dealt with. I know many of you have seen this data, so I'll quickly go through it. This is a heat map of what we call the 400-woman study. It's actually 394 women. If you've never seen a heat map before, each column is a woman. Can you see that? Okay, good. So each column is a woman, and the yellow is low abundance and red is high abundance. And this is relative abundance, okay? And so what's nice about the vaginal microbiome as opposed to the gut microbiome or other parts is that we can reasonably cluster women based on their diversity and relative abundance of the bacteria that they have. So, for example, these women here are all dominated by Lactobacillus gastrii. They're reading reds and pinks, which is 80 to 100%. And you can see from the dendrogram above that they all cluster together. And that's not just clustering based on the DOM. We call it, when I'm talking about these, we call them community state types, is the term we gave to them, CSTs. It's not just the leading bacteria that determines the cluster. It's everything else that's in there. But it is usually dominated by one of the lactobacilli. Here's Lactobacillus inners dominated, CST3. CST1, L. crispatus dominated. 5 is Jensenii. The numbers were just randomly. They weren't assigned in any particular order. 5 is Jensenii. And then you're going to hear me talk a lot today about what we call CST4, which is a BV-like state. You'll see here they're missing the lactobacilli. They have high anaerobes, Prevotella, adipobium, all the usual suspects for BV. But what this tells you is that as an epidemiologist, I love this because we can cluster women we can categorize women, we can analyze it. And I've been accused in the past, and it's a good criticism, that this is a form of data reduction that we shouldn't be doing because basically what we're taking is a continuous variable and we're slicing it. Well, we do this all the time in epidemiology. We define races. We assign age categories. It's not the only way to analyze data. It's one way to analyze the data. And I think it's informative for what it is if you understand that we are slicing. And so what we've seen in our current study is we slice CST3 here, these L-inners women. Well, these LNers women, if you study them tomorrow, a lot of them transition to CST4, which I'm going to show you. So these slices are not precise, necessarily. And I will show you in the longitudinal dynamics section. This is a tetrahedron, which is essentially showing us, these are all 900 samples from a study that I did as a graduate student where we did twice weekly sampling for 16 weeks. In the middle is a low Cresspatus, is that CST4 low lactobacillus state. At the vertices are where you're dominated by the certain, each CST. So this is lactobacillus Cresspatus dominated. Green is lactobacillus inners. Blue and purple are lactobacillus jensenii and gasseri dominated. And what you'll see is, this is an asymptomatic woman, not reporting anything to us in terms of symptoms. Let's see if I can get this to start. So she starts in this low lactobacillus state, this group 4, yellow. These are samples taken every 3 days. And she's tending here toward going from group 4 to L. Cresspatus, which we actually don't often see, and that's why I pulled this slide. But her plane of where she fluctuates in tends towards L. inners, which is a state that we're going to talk a little bit about today. It's a state that's been associated with BV. It's also the state that women emerge from when they after treatment from BV quite often. And these are women, so this is a woman who's every 3 days bouncing around. Every sample is different. Now, not all women are this dynamic. I will show you. These are six women from that same study. Each of these lines here you probably can't see in the back is when she samples. It's every 3 days again. A and B is what I would call what you would expect of a lactobacillus-dominated vaginal microbiota over time. This is what we expect. Here it's red is lactobacillus cresspatus-dominated. These little red dots down here is when she menstruates. Of course, there's going to be some disruption when she menstruates. And this is the usual pattern that we expect. She went into here, she went into an L-inner state, and then emerged right back. This woman is L-inners-dominated, and she was consistent throughout and just had some disruptions during menses. C and D is what I call someone who's stably not lactobacillus dominated. So this woman, C, is Gardnerella dominated. This woman here, D, is adipobium and Gardnerella, and she's consistent with being disrupted. We call it a disrupted state, but we don't actually know what her risk is because she's stable. There's questions about whether the stability itself is providing her some protection. E and F are women that over time are just all over the place. They're lactobacillus dominated, they're switching out, they're just a mess. And the question I had when I first saw this data, are women C and D different than women who are E and F? So, when you get reviews, take them and run with them, embrace them. And the reviews that I got were fluctuations of limited clinical significance. And I really felt like I was onto something, that these fluctuations were really important. I spent a lot of time as epidemiologist looking at the behaviors that a woman has in the days, in the 1 days, 3 days, 5 days, 7 days, 10 days before these fluctuations. What is causing these fluctuations? We looked at douching, lubricant use, new partner, you name it. We had a daily diary for it. And I spent a lot of time looking at these fluctuations. And I really feel like there's work still to be done. Are there periods of higher risk? If so, what are their duration? I heard that University of Washington, Seattle is doing some great work with doing more frequent sampling, looking at hours of sampling, like 4 samples per day. What affects a woman to persist or fluctuate in an at-risk state? Is it biology or epidemiology? Is there an optimal state? More than 25% of women are in this low lactobacillus state, and they're often asymptomatic. That doesn't mean they don't have signs. They have signs. A lot of them do, but they're not reporting them to you. So the challenge of epidemiology is to conduct well-designed studies and synthesize data to find that actionable intervention. And as I mentioned, there is data reduction in microbiome research. I think it has a place, and we can have a whole, I think there could be a debate on the methods we use to analyze the data and what their pros and cons are. You are not to interpret this slide except to say this is what I receive on my desk, and this is the overwhelming feeling you see is what I experienced. This was what this is those 32 women who self-collected samples twice weekly for 16 weeks. The color switches are her changes in community state types. The squares, triangles, and circles that you can't see from the back of the room are fluctuations in detection of human papillomavirus and high-risk human papillomavirus. This was a study I did with Patty Gravett where she was very interested in the changes in detection of HPV, women going below the level of detection. And so we were trying to see if the vaginal microbiome was associated with those fluctuations below the level of detection. And it is a challenging, challenging bit to try and model this. I've worked with mathematicians, statisticians, everyone. And this is what we found. I worked with a great statistician named Michelle Chardell. She used to be University of Washington and Hopkins, and she's now at National Institute of Aging. And we looked at the rate of transition between HPV positive and HPV negative states and found this amazing little finding in a study of 32 women. It needs to be replicated, and larger studies are going on. And But we found that women, if you were in a lactobacillus gastrae-dominated state, you had a four-fold increased ability to move from an HBV-positive to HBV-negative state compared to L. crispatus, which is what we think of as another strong lactobacilli. And then going the other way, going from HBV-negative to positive, L-inners and this low lactobacillus CST4A, which is a subgroup of CST4, were associated with increases in risk to HBV negative to positive. The p-values were not significant, but it's a small study, and it's just indicative. So I am very fortunate to have a newly funded study with my old mentor from, not my old mentor, he's not old, my longtime mentor from NIH, Mark Klebanoff, where we worked on the longitudinal study of vaginal flora. Jane Schwebke was one of the local PIs in Birmingham. And in that study, they recruited 3,620 women for 5 visits over a year. And in that study, there were 680 incident STDs. And so what we're doing this new R01 is we're looking at the vaginal microbiome before she becomes infected, so the visit before. And we're matching that case to a control that's age, race, and visit matched from the same visit. And just yesterday, I got fresh data. This is the first data we've gotten from the study because we have a new robot at IGS. We can talk all about the robot. We have a new robot, and so we've been doing some pilot testing. And these are the first 44 cases and 45 controls. And basically what it shows, as expected, is that the cases, these are samples taken before she has an incident STD, is CST4B is more common, as expected. And we're going to be looking at lactobacillus inners. We're going to be looking at metagenomics, the strain differences. We're going to be looking at lactic acid isomers. We're looking at immunology. And interestingly, among the controls, there was some gentianae and gastrae popping up, which were not popping up among our cases in this small sample. So I just have 2 minutes left, and I want to give a plug to 2 of my students. Joanna Holm is a new postdoc with us at IGS. She came from water ecology, and she sold me because she said that coral have mucus, and I was sold. I hired her right away. And the work that she's doing is on oligotyping. She's going to be doing our metagenomics for our R01, where she's looking at the comparative genomics of lactobacillus inners. But this is just a brief slide on oligotyping, where she looked at very subtle variations among 16S RNA gene sequences. And what she found was that one strain, L-inners AA, is associated with women with a low pH. And there were no other lactic acid producers that were a significant part of the community. But substrain resolution requires more testing to figure out why we're seeing this. But this is just to say we're delving into why does that strain of lactobacillus inners not protecting that case from incident STI? Why are there L. crispatus dominated women? Is there something different about those lactobacillus that are not protecting them? And then Joanna Borgogna is one of our PhD students who's working on metabolomics in Carl Yeoman's lab. And I had a study published a few years ago on the association between smoking and bacterial vaginosis. If you learn anything, smoking decimates the vaginal microbiome. I'm convinced of it. We're trying to do the longitudinal studies. But what we learned in this study is that among women who have this CST4 state, this low lactobacillus state, smokers have much higher cadaverine and putrescine rates. And this is associated, I'm going to finish up. This is associated with having more odor and more morbidity, but Carl thinks that women who smoke may have increased risk for susceptibilities to STIs because of those biogenic amines. So in summary, I just want to communicate an appreciation for the variations in the microbiome composition and understanding the vaginal microbiome and how dynamic it is and how we have to study human behaviors and continue the active research, merging basic science with epidemiology. And I'm going to end with my PAC, Jacques Ravel, Paul Gager. Paul is a bioinformaticist, mathematician. Joanna Holm is my PhD student. Courtney Robinson runs my lab. And, of course, my longtime collaborators, Khalil Ghanem and now Sue Tudnam, who just got her K award at Johns Hopkins. And, of course, my funders, thank you so much for all of your support. And a plug for a postdoc. I'm looking for an epidemiology postdoc.